Well, you know, I got into teaching because I couldn't find a job in journalism. I had left school, had gone down to Mexico to freelance, came back to my hometown in Nogales in Tucson, Arizona area, and stumbled upon this job. And it was teaching English as a second language, Spanish as a second language. I taught writing. I taught a little bit of photography. I was a soccer coach. I cooked on weekends. This was a residential school with some day students, day students, and some kids who lived on campus. The thing about the school was that it was, I didn't have a teaching degree. They hired me because, you know, I could do other things. But this was a school that took in a lot of kids with emotional baggage. It was very focused on emotional health of these children. And many of them essentially were throwaways. These were kids who were growing up with no guidance, no parents really in their lives. The thing about it that was interesting was that half the kids were filthy rich. They'd spend the weekends looking at People magazine saying, there's my dad, there's my future mom, there's my old mom, and there's maybe my other dad. They were kids who were essentially just farmed out. I mean, they were just sent to camps and spent most of their time in places that, you know, with someone other than their parents. The other half were very poor kids from the local Pima Indian Reservation, some kids from Mexico. So this mix of kids made it for just a fascinating place. And when my first year, I thought, I don't want to do anything else. This is for me. This is really... It really hooked me. I loved the kids. I very troubled kids, but I loved doing what I was doing. The second year, there was this big falling out. About a third of the teachers left, disagreements over pay. I was getting paid like $9,000 a year. But of course, I was saving tons of money because I was living on campus. And so it wasn't like that desperate in terms of my income. But once these teachers left, my mentors, that was it. I had a miserable second year, and I couldn't wait to get out. And what I realized was that without the training, without the mentoring, without real support, I could conceivably do more damage than good. Because I couldn't go to anyone for advice about how to deal with a troublesome child or someone who was having, learning problems. So I just said, this is it for me. When I look back, and if you ask me, would you do it over again? Absolutely. Even that bad year was an enormous lesson, life lesson.
It's interesting because I think so many, when you see a bio of someone, it's about four paragraphs. It's easy to make that narrative, teacher now covers education for NPR. Straight line.
At the time, I never imagined that I would be covering education. And in fact, I was mentioning earlier that... And to you just a few minutes ago, I didn't want to, get kind of pigeonholed on a beat. I wanted to do other stuff. In fact, I wanted to eventually convince NPR that I should be on the border. And to this day, I tell them, I should spend more time on the border. That's home for me. Mm-hmm. It's familiar territory. And the issues there, all aside from education, are still, enormously important to me. At one point, I also thought, well, maybe I should try my hand at just reporting for Mexico for NPR. But that's where life gets in the way. And, your wife, your children also become part of the bigger plan.
Right.
And so it never worked out.
If you cover the White House, you pretty much know what you might be covering. If the federal government's close to shut down, if there's the State of the Union coming up, when it's something broad as education, barring, the implementation of No Child Left Behind, it's such a broad subject.
I've always told my editor that being in Washington does not help our coverage. I mean, you get drawn into the rat race or the next story with little or no thinking about whether it really is important or whether it matters to people. And if there's one policy area where there is a total disconnect, in my view, it's my opinion, it's in education. What Secretary Arne Duncan, the Obama administration, Bush administration, and Congress do about schools, even in this age of a national debate over school reform, what they do does not does not really inform the discussion locally. Mm-hmm. In Arkansas, throughout the South, certainly, where much of the nation's school reform efforts took root with President, with then Governor Clinton, Governor Lamar Alexander, and people like that, the stories out of these areas are far more important. These are the stories that we should be covering with a national perspective on it. Why is what's happening in Arkansas, for example, with the education of immigrant children, how does that inform the larger debate? Because you're in the trenches. You get a chance to examine the real challenges for teachers, for families, for kids. And I think that that is so identifiable for other parts of the country that these are the stories. And besides, our listeners tell us all the time, tell us the stories. We want stories.
Whether it's Benton Harbor, Michigan, or...
Exactly. And talking heads out of Washington just don't cut it, in my book.
Nuts and bolts question. How do you and your editor decide what stories you'll work on?
You know, it depends often on my editor. Most of the stories I choose, I've been doing this long enough so that, you know, I think I'm pretty good at just being on top of the important trends. One example, because of the economic situation in this country and the sluggish economy, a lot of the folks with Planet Money were reporting that the impact it was having on people, certainly in terms of joblessness, was unprecedented. I mean, the joblessness and this so-called recovering economy with little or no jobs being created was different. I mean, it was really interesting, very interesting story. But one of the aspects, or one of the interesting things about it, was that for folks who've always struggled to get jobs because they don't have a high school diploma or college or anything else, this was even worse. So those unemployment rates and the persistence of just being unemployed were just through the roof. I mean, the data was showing very, very dire situations. And it just occurred to us, why not do a series of stories on dropouts? So that story or that series is in the works. I'm winding it down, hopefully, within the next 2 or 3 weeks. We did our first story. These are almost all done. They're going to be airing on Morning Edition as a series. Out of California, San Bernardino, a little county called Okogie County, South Carolina, Baltimore, and Illinois. And we chose these places in order to get a representation of, in terms of age, geography, and just the landscape or the backdrop to these people's stories. These essentially are profiles. The point is that when NPR... we are obligated to cover the obvious things, whether it's a huge announcement by the Department of Education or Governor Christie in New Jersey saying something, you know, that's going to really shock people or impact schools, or the other stories that I did not long ago, the impasse in Indiana, the Indianapolis State House with the governor on collective bargaining, my colleagues doing the stories out of Wisconsin and the impact on teachers' unions. I mean, those are obvious stories we have to do, but we do have time, and that's what I've always appreciated about NPR. We have time to sit back and say, you know, what are the stories that really will hook people and open people's eyes or present a new perspective or give us a sense of urgency of why these trends or these changes, why we should hear about them. And that was the case certainly with the Dropout series. And over the years, certainly in 20 years at NPR, that's, I've had an enormous amount of autonomy and independence to do that. The trick is, of course, to sell it to your editors, mm-hmm. or to the shows, for that matter. Sometimes the shows may, take it or leave it. More often than not, of course, we sell them on these stories as well.
How difficult is it if you're doing a profile that's part of a series and you've got 7 minutes? If it's Morning Edition, if it's All Things Considered, you might have some more time?
That's changed dramatically at NPR. We used to, the number of 7, 7.5, even 8 minute stories, especially on Morning Edition, because they're the ones who have that format. Mm-hmm. It's harder to do on ATC because they're often driven more by news.
Right.
And a lot of the stuff that they do with hosts and so forth. But so the 7.5 or 8.5 minute stories are now rare. I think it's put us in a position to be able to tell these stories more compactly and but just as effectively. And that's, you know, that's a challenge. What I'm saying is that we were spoiled and that we could take all this time. And I have to admit, not all stories, even if they're really compelling, are 7.5-minute stories. Some of the best stories are often 3.5, 4.5. And so that's been a little bit of a tough change. But again, that it just means that you have to work harder at telling the stories you want to tell.
You travel all over the country. Is there any technique you use to disarm people? Because not everyone likes to see a reporter.
I'm kind of chuckling here because I was talking to Antoinette, about your reporter here, about how you do that. Do you use silence? Do you use your microphone? Do you use body language? How do you build that trust that you need, even if it's only for 3 minutes? I wouldn't call it tricks of the trade, but I think that there are things that work. And one of those is that you want to have people relax. That microphone often gets in the way. But if you begin a conversation way before you sit down and, you know, and mic somebody, if you begin a conversation with someone and not contrived, you know, hey, you know, tell me about your life or anything, it's more a conversation of that conveys legitimate interest in someone's life. And if it's a tough interview, that becomes even more important. You know, I'm not your adversary here. I'm not your friend either. I'm just here to ask you questions about a story that's important. And it doesn't always work. You know, some people just clam up. They won't talk to you. Obviously, if it's a tough story where people just don't want to say anything, well, there's only so much you can do. But sometimes people do open up. And you know when someone has said something really important or very compelling. Any good journalist will say, that's it. Mm-hmm. And that's a magical moment. That's what, you know, I was saying to Antoinette earlier. We have a license to be nosy. And if you're curious, if you're really a good storyteller, You can't ask for a better job.
You have a beat. There aren't that many organizations left that have the luxury of being able to assign people to beats. The New York Times, of course, Network News to some degree, not nearly as much as it used to, NPR. I wonder what obviously we know what the value is, the education that you give yourself as you go on. But you used the term that you applied to the beat when you first started, pigeonholed. Is there still some feeling for you that, boy, I do wish...
I have colleagues at NPR who get burned out with a beat. And my colleague, Larry Abramson, who used to be the National Desk Editor, has often told me, he reported on security issues, FBI, and then he got a little bit tired of that, and he replaced me when I took off for a fellowship. And he liked it. And now he's, I think, ready to move on. So it depends on the reporter. Going back to the point I was trying to make earlier, education or the beat, education beat drew me in because to me it became a window to so many other things that I was interested in. Immigration, certainly economic, stories about economic development and how people get good jobs and how this country develops a workforce that is, that it's competitive. These are all stories in our public schools. The demographic shifts, we're seeing them, not just in certain states, but overall in the demographic shift and especially the growth of the Latino community. So if the beat offers you this chance to not just cover or to be pigeonholed, to do the predictable stories, but allows you to just explore so many other facets of this beat, then in my view, that's it's a great beat. Not all beats are like that. I mean, you could like the White House. I mean, there, everything is driven by whatever happens at the White House. I'm not sure I would be, you know, some people like that, but I mean, I'm not so sure I'd be good for that. The foreign beat often is the sexy one, mm-hmm. Even if it means, you know, you're in the line of fire, like our folks are in the Middle East these days. But I think the education beat, the one thing that I lament or that I think it suffers from is this, on the one hand, you have the American people say, this is the most important thing we could be doing, you know, improving our schools, helping our kids. But it's lip service for the most part. And that's one of the tough things to do as a reporter. How do you make these stories urgent? It would seem obvious, raising children so that they prosper. But the reality is that we neglect our schools, we neglect the teaching profession, we neglect, or at least leave lawmakers and politicians off the hook. We let people get away with saying that they think education is important, but not doing enough. And I think that that's a huge dilemma for this country and for education reporters. It's, you know, how do we make the connection here mm-hmm. between our future and our schools? And there's fascinating stories out there about, you know, that help us tell these stories. But sometimes I get the feeling that they fall on deaf ears. Or even if we get an enormous response to a great story or a very compelling kid, you know, who's telling his or her story, it's in one ear and then later it becomes kind of like second, you know, it just secondary mm-hmm. to the other dumb story about political or government shutdowns. And I don't know if there's blame here other than in the abstract, but I think that a lot of this is affected by the news cycle of the 24/7 barrage of news where Americans are bombarded with stories or issues. And I think it just, you know, the important stories sometimes get lost.
Claudio Sanchez, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.